The following podcast is brought to you by The Village Zendo. For more information, visit villagezendo.org.
Well, good morning, everyone. It is really wonderful to see so many familiar faces and new faces. This is amazing. I am joining you from Hyannis Zendo on Cape Cod, and we've got some of our Sangha here in the Zendo as well. So this is a beautiful hybrid moment, a time when new things can occur through hybridity. And this is, as we were sitting here, I'm not sure if you can hear it through my small speaker, but it's a brilliant morning for Zazen. We've got this big breeze and storm blowing in off the ocean. The Zendo is right next to a marsh that leads out onto the ocean, and the wind has been blowing. We can hear the trees and the leaves making this big commotion, but when it dies down for a moment, underneath it, you can hear the surf on the beach, just far away. And it's this soundscape that feels so supportive, full of energy. Now here comes the rain as well. So last Saturday, in fact, we had our first Zazen Kai, in-person and online Zazen Kai out here at the Hyannis Zendo. This is our first time meeting in person as a relatively, for us, decent-sized group since COVID started. And we all felt this amazing sense of gratitude to be in the room together and also to be able to share our practice via Zoom with friends who are far away and can't join in the same space. And we did orioki, chanting, kinhin, all the old forms came back to us so vibrant, so alive, you know, after our hiatus without them. And we had Bokushu Hoshi up from New York. And he graciously traveled all the way, braving public transportation to Boston, then out to the Cape. And, you know, we benefited from his strong practice energy, his really rich Dharma talk, and his unique style of Zen. It brought a real new feeling and energy into the Zendo here. And this gift of practicing together, this kind of wonderful moment we had, is the same moment we're having now, this chance to connect in something new, which is this meeting of us, of all of us, this time. And in this meeting, if we're here for it, the fullness of our lives is revealed. It's a fluid moment. The circumstances are changing. It was sunny this morning, and now we're in the midst of a storm. And I am especially now deeply grateful to be part of a practice that places a recognition of change, of impermanence, at the heart of what we do, this fundamental recognition that everything is changing. And this allows us to experience this change without being swept away by it. It allows us as a community and as individuals to be responsive to what comes up in the moment and to find skillful ways to act in accord with each emerging new moment. And so if you were signed up for the Village Zendo in-person session this summer, You've likely already found out that that session had to be canceled. I know I, along with all of us, were looking forward to this opportunity to sit together face to face in person. But this disappointment about not being able to do this is outweighed by the gratitude I'm feeling for the committee that had to make this really tough decision, that looked at what was going on with clear-eyed, penetrating gaze and understood that meeting together is not appropriate right now. And this response to change emerges from our practice. You know, we see it on big levels and right in our zazen, you know, when all our old habit energies show up and we let them go. We hear the breeze in the trees and we come back to this moment. And so I've been feeling deep gratitude to our practice, to this Sangha, this extended Sangha, and to our teachers who have transmitted this to us and who spend so much time and energy pointing us right back in that right direction. And so today I wanted to spend some time thinking about the paramitas, right? And these are teachings that emerge from the earliest epic of Buddhism. They appear in the Pali text of the Theravada tradition, and then they are translated into Sanskrit, and they are also later on become a central part of the Mahayana school of Buddhism, which is where Zen fits in. And in Mahayana Buddhism, there were first six paramitas articulated, and later on that was expanded to 10. And these paramitas describe the qualities of mind of a bodhisattva, which is, we've recently, or maybe not so recently, but we talk about as an enlightening being, someone who is actively working towards bringing clarity into the world, someone who's taken the vow and direction in their life to save all beings. And the term paramita is often translated as perfections. And the six are generosity, morality, or practicing the sila, practicing the precepts, patience, endurance, energy, or this vigorous perseverance that we need for this practice. This is not easy. Concentration, this meditative clarity that we develop in our zazen, and wisdom, prajna paramita. And the term paramita also in Sanskrit translates as leading to the other shore, leading people to the other shore. And this is the quality of a bodhisattva in action. And so this kind of listing of six paramitas is one of a sort of long and extended list of ways that ideas are grouped, concepts are grouped in Buddhism. You know, we have the Eightfold Path, we have the Four Vows, we have disciplines, elements on the path, all these different kind of organizational schemes that come from the Indian period and are transformed in the later subsequent epics of Buddhism. And the idea of sort of exploring the permutations seems to me like looking at facets of a gem and this detailed examination. And it's not unique to early Buddhist writings. In other Indian writings going on at the time, Indian thinkers and scholars and practitioners were doing very similar things. And I'm familiar with this in music texts, especially these early Sanskrit texts, and many of them emerging around the same time as the paramitas are being articulated. They look at all the permutations of a particular musical phrase, a dance phrase, a pattern. And in exploring all these details, a miraculous whole appears. Something beautiful is revealed. And while the paramitas emphasize distinct qualities of a bodhisattva's mind, they're really in the same way windows opening into this wholeness of our lives. They're different flavors for different moments, what's needed in the circumstance. And the first paramita in both the Theravada and Mahayana traditions is generosity, dana paramita. And this mind of generosity nurtures compassion, nurtures caring for the self and for others, for the Sangha. Looking at the situation, what's the compassionate, caring thing to do right now? It's not to come together face to face. And so this dana, this generosity, is definitely not limited to the dana bowl that we see when we walk in the zendo, the contributions we make, but it includes those for sure. Anzan Hoshin Roshi called dana paramita the recognition of the fundamental richness of experiencing. The richness of encountering the world through our senses. The wind blows in the trees and the world opens. Far off, the ferry is backing out and you hear the blast of the foghorn. This is encountering the richness of this present moment. Dana paramita, appreciating this moment. Or as Maizumi Roshi encouraged us, to appreciate your life. And so encountering the abundance of this world in this moment and experiencing it and sharing it, sharing in it and sharing it, is dana paramita. And so giving is dana, and also receiving is this paramita, this mind. It takes both to create this mind of the bodhisattva. And when I think of that mind, I'm reminded of some time that Sejin and I spent in the city of Chennai in South India. And we lived in a kind of rickety four-floor apartment building, big concrete beast. And we were on the third floor, and above us was an elderly Indian couple. He was retired from working in the trains, right? So he was worked on the train system and had this long career and was retired. And his wife was a very caring and wonderful woman, quiet but powerful. And about halfway or three quarters of the way through our stay, Sejin had to come back to the States to work. And so I was there by myself. And one morning I hear a knock on the door, and it's my elderly neighbor, balancing this tray of dosas and different breakfast foods in her hands. And she had come down these very treacherous concrete stairs with all this food, and she was this very elderly, seemingly fragile, but definitely not woman, banging on my door. And she said, for you. And I said, well, you really don't need to do that, but this is great, thank you, because she's a brilliant cook, and this is wonderful food. So I ate that breakfast, and you know, that was that. And then the next day, and she comes down again with a tray of food, all this wonderful homemade South Indian breakfast food. And, you know, this went on. And finally I said, please, you know, I love this, but it's not necessary. You know, I was starting to feel anxious about her coming down and doing all this work for me. They were, you know, Indian middle-class family, but by no means well off. And she was doing this work herself, and they were expending their resources for me. And I would say, thank you. And she would say, no, 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 take it. And she would keep coming. And eventually, finally, she spoke up and said, look, there is no thank you and no please in this family. And she had taken us on as family. You know, no need for thank you, no need for please. Just what is needed, and here it is. And so this family, you know, was not my blood family, but this was family extended. And the need, and meeting the need, there was nothing extra needed in this giving, only, you know, willingness to receive on my part. And it resonates in me still to this day, this Donna. Of my Indian grandma keeps manifesting. And Dhanaparamita can emerge when we let go of what's sometimes called the mind of poverty that really obscures its functioning. And a mind of poverty is something that arises from our habit energies. It's a sense that there's not enough resources. How can I give? I don't have enough. Not enough security. In the midst of this pandemic, everything is up in the air. How can I be generous? You know, the sense that I'm not being understood, not being heard. There's not enough attention to me. Sense of fragility, of health, lack of power. And Norm Fisher suggests using these feelings of not enough as a practice tool, letting them be bells of mindfulness to remind us to come back to this moment, you know, this feeling of lack, then coming back. And this is a practice tool that does not run out. Yeah, and for me, I guess one of the big ones, especially in this last year and a half, has been this sense of poverty of time. Not enough time, too much to do. And this habit energy takes me away from what's in front of me, from the person that's in front of me. A couple days ago, we watched a children's summer production of Alice in Wonderland. And throughout the play, there was a 9-year-old white rabbit. And she would come out and shout, I'm late, I'm late, I'm late. Right? And I know that feeling. No, I don't have time for this. And that hinders Dhanaparamita. It obscures it. And so there's three or four types of giving, in this grouping, giving of material resources, giving the teachings directly, or much better, through example, through the way we live our lives. And then there's protection and fearlessness. And these permutations are interrelated, different facets of a gem. You know, the dosas our Indian grandmother brought down were material generosity. But it was a deep, deep teaching for me. She made me feel safe and protected at a time where I was in a really unfamiliar place. And in the Heart Sutra, we chant, no hindrance in the mind, no hindrance, therefore no fear. So where's this space come from for no fear? In our Zazen, we allow this space for generosity, this fearlessness to arise. When we let go of the habit energies, the minds of poverty, this expansive mind of generosity can emerge. We loosen our grip on our idea, and suddenly the world can step in. The world can blow in off the ocean. And this generosity is giving you yourself during Zazen, and it gives others, yourself, off the cushion. It's being open to receive what's being offered in this moment, not clinging to what I think is right and wrong, but being able to receive this bodhisattva mind being presented to us by the people around us, by the world around us. In our eighth precept, the eighth brave precept, not sparing the Dharma assets, Bodhidharma comments, not being stingy about a single thing is called the precept of not sparing the Dharma assets. This not being stingy about a single thing. It takes letting go. It takes courage and faith, fearlessness that arises from our practice. Or as the Zen peacemakers say, using all the ingredients of my life. This is the precept of not being stingy. And so Dhanaparamita, this mind of generosity, is not the idea of generosity. It's not some beautiful thing we play with, but it's this vow in action. We recite our Samu service every morning after practice. The short Mahaparamita Gata, and then we have the echo, which is the dedication. And this simple dedication to me really points to the heart of this Dana practice. We chant, may our daily work be a source of practice, awareness, and compassion. May this offering be extended to all sentient beings. May we realize the Buddha way in every task we undertake, every action gives us the space for generosity to arise. And during our Zazen Kai, I guess I'll just share one brief example about Seijin, who was our Tenzo, the head. She was also a head server, and she was, in fact, all the servers for the Zazen Kai. She was also the afternoon Jikido and I think the Eno, so this is kind of standard fare out here, a lot of taking on many hats. And the night before, as Tenzo, as the cook, she was preparing the meal. She was preparing, in fact, an Indian meal, oddly enough, of chana masala in the second bowl. And this recipe she tried called for, I think, 3 serrano peppers. And she decided to use 1 because she didn't want to tax our sort of pallid taste buds out here. But when it was done, late at night, after a day of prepping for the Zazen Kai, we tasted it and it was beautifully spicy, way too spicy to serve during Orioki. And so early the next morning, she was up again preparing a second batch of chana masala. Doing this work of generosity, of feeding the Sangha, doing what was needed. And this Tenzo work is often a great place to find our generosity opportunities. It's very much a personal practice of cooking in the kitchen, attending for your own practice, but it's a practice of attending to the community. It's not wrapped up in ideas of right and wrong, community or generosity. It's, you know, cut the vegetables, taste the food, prepare and serve. Dogen teaches us handle even a single leaf of green in such a way that it manifests the body of the Buddha. This in turn allows the Buddha to manifest through the leaf. This attention reveals cooking as the practice of the way, the practice of great generosity, for the cook herself and for the community. Dogen also says in his instructions to the cook, "This is a power which you cannot grasp with your rational mind." This is not the idea of generosity. You can't eat that for lunch. He goes on, "It operates freely according to the situation in the most natural way." When we get out of our way, most of the time. "And at the same time, this power functions in our lives to clarify and settle activities and is beneficial to all living things." Generosity functions in all directions, in all moments. So I just want to end with a short quote from Vimalakirti, who you probably remember was the layman who was sick in his small room, and the Buddha sent some of his disciples to preach, but Vimalakirti, his insights and the power of his practice was so deep that the situation was reversed and he ended up teaching everyone. And at one point during this session, he noticed that someone was hungry. I think it was Shariputra. And so Shariputra couldn't pay attention to the teaching, and Vimalakirti called up into the Buddha heavens and sent an emissary to bring back all this wonderful food, this dana food. And he says, "Eat the realized one's ambrosial delicacy. It's scented with great compassion. Don't partake of it with a limited mind. That would cause indigestion." Thank you.